Welcome back to another episode of Sense by Meg Fora. And this week we are diving into the little world of Aurelia again. She's just turned 8 months old and she is on the brink of some really exciting milestones. So join me as I chat to her mum, Julia. And today we're going to be talking about Aurelia's budding attempts to crawl and the adorable leaps that she makes while standing. We'll explore why crawling isn't just a cute milestone, but actually a crucial step in boosting cognitive development and spatial reasoning. So if you're wondering about whether or not crawling is important, this is an episode you don't want to miss. And if you're struggling with sleep and teething in your 6 to 12 month old, don't worry, because Aurelia's journey will reveal soothing techniques and also how probiotics can actually assist after your little one's had some diarrhea after teething. So we've got lots of information on sleep and teething. For some of you, you might be battling with separation anxiety. And today, Aurelia is certainly starting to show a little bit of that. And so we learn effective strategies to navigate this very common stage with warmth and consistency. And we'll help your little one to feel secure and loved. And then Julia also tells us a little bit about their family vacation and how meaningful it was and the glimpse into the joys of kind of going on holiday with two energetic little ones. So whether you're looking for developmental tips, sleep solutions, or just a chat and just to catch up on what Julia and little Aurelia are up to, this episode promises to be a treasure trove for moms of 6 to 12 month olds. So don't miss out, stay tuned, and we'll take you through Aurelia's next steps.
Welcome to Sense by Meg Fora, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Meg Fora, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we're going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Makia every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, everybody. Great to have you here with us this week. And on this week's podcast, we're joined again by Julia De Silva. And Julia, we have been tracking her journey over the course of the last few months with her little girl, Aurelia, who is now not as little as she was when we started. We have been chatting initially weekly and then 2 weekly, and now we're approaching 3 weekly as we approach the second half of her year. But a huge welcome to you, Julia. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Meg. Yeah, she's actually last night when I was lying awake and couldn't get back to sleep, I was thinking about that first time that I saw your Instagram story and the kind of the story that prompted me to get in touch with you for us to kind of start this process. And I still remember it quite vividly, even though it is now 8 months ago.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it's an amazing thing because, I mean, it is a huge commitment to be that mom that I speak to, you know, every week or two through her baby's life. But I think you're going to look back and absolutely love it. And I know that Kaz, when we chatted weekly about Max, afterwards, she said it was the most incredible diary of his first year of life, lots of which she would have otherwise forgotten. So I hope that you are going to reap some wonderful benefits from this long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny, when I listen back to the episodes as they come out, there's so much that I have already forgotten. So it's a wonderful record.
Yeah, absolutely. And moms, if you're listening to this and you would like to be that regular mom, I'm always on the outlook. I have actually started a new journey with a mom called Nina, who's also going to be joining us going forward. Her episodes will be coming out around about the same time as this one, actually. But I'm always looking for moms who are willing to share their story, their challenges, be candid and be super real, because that's what this is all about. And Julia, you have most certainly been very candid and real, and also very wise. I've learned so much from you along the way as well. So what are we going to learn about in the life of an 8-month-old? What is going on?
Well, you can't put an 8-month-old down on a surface that isn't the floor because she's rolling so fast and moving so fast at the moment that those days are behind us. She is definitely thinking about crawling. She's not quite there yet, but she's showing all of the signs. So if I ever sit her down and she's in a sitting position, she'll almost immediately push herself forward as if she's going to crawl. And then her legs slip out from under her. She hasn't quite mastered getting onto all fours and kind of staying there yet, but she's definitely wanting to do that movement. She's also loving being standing up on her legs. She can't stand by herself, but she loves to sort of stand on your lap and jump up and down. And she's getting kind of much stronger in that respect. So I do think it's fairly imminent, the crawling, and I think that'll be a whole new world of pain, as they say.
Yeah. And crawling is such an interesting milestone because it is actually our most variable milestone in that, in many respects. Number one, some little ones don't crawl. So, you know, whereas all little ones, unless they are not developing, typically will walk and will talk. But some little ones literally skip the stage, this crawling stage. And then there's the ages that you can do it, which can be as early as, I mean, in some little ones, 7 months, and as late as only starting at 11 months in others. So it's very variable in terms of time. And then it's also variable in terms of style. And, you know, I'm an obsessive OT where my children, and particularly my firstborn, because I sweated him properly, he had to crawl because I know how important crawling is as a milestone. And what James did was because he was such a social butterfly, so eager to get on the go, he actually started crawling at 7 months, but because he started so early, he actually didn't have all of the muscular foundations in his core. And so he ended up crawling with one leg out to the side. So he had this bizarre kind of like shift of one leg that kind of scooted him along straight, and the other one was crawling normally. And so it was quite distressing for me because I was like, oh, no, you're not doing this like you're supposed to. This is not by the book. But at least he did do it. But it is a very important milestone. I guess one of the things I'd love to ask you, you said she's kind of leaning forward, looking like she wants to go. Has she tried to get into the crawling position by going sideways yet? So rotating her arms kind of as a pivot over her hips sideways.
Yes, she definitely does that as well. In general, she likes to look around her. That sounds like an odd thing to say, but it's funny because I noticed it this morning when I was giving her breakfast. She can't concentrate for any length of time. She's totally easy to distract. So she will twist herself around and look around a lot. And certainly from the sitting position when she's playing, she does, especially if I put something behind her, like a tower of blocks or something, she will twist her body and move in that way too.
Yeah, so that's actually one of the best ways. I mean, there's a couple of little exercises you can do. Not that we need to rush her because 8 months is perfect. But one of the things is to put toys to the side of her, because often what they do is if you're turning to the side and it's a little bit out of reach, you have to put your hand that is on the side of the toy down. Otherwise, you're going to fall over. And then they reach their other hand over to reach for the toy. And before they know it, they end up on kind of two arms on the side. And that's often how they get up. And you can actually, just by kind of putting it in this typical OT or physio activity we do, is you're kind of sitting with your little one, put the toys to the side, just out of reach. She leans over as she puts the further away hand down. So she's now got two hands down. Pivot her little pelvis into a crawling position. Just kind of lift it up into a crawling position. And she'll actually be in that crawling position. So it's quite a nice exercise. And then obviously also all the tummy time activities because, you know, while they're on their tummy, they're either rolling or pushing up and then they start to get into that crawling position, which is great.
Yeah, I must try that sideways one. She's good about going forward, but it's a good idea to kind of encourage her to go either side as well.
Yeah, no, it is a really good idea. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, crawling is just such an important milestone because, you know, it's not just a milestone that gets them going and gets them moving. But in that position, they can explore under and through. And as soon as they're doing that, they're actually exploring the spatial qualities of their body. And as soon as they do that, they develop spatial reasoning, which later on is the foundation for all of your STEM skills, your science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and in fact, art. If you put that into STEM, you can make it STEAM. All of those STEAM skills are based on spatial reasoning, and crawling is the very best way to learn that. So for any of us who are thinking about our little ones, you know, long-term in terms of their cognitive learning, actually crawling is a foundation. So that's why I really do sweat crawling. I think it's one of our most important milestones.
Sure. That's so interesting. I didn't realize that. It's amazing how these relatively kind of small moments in the journey turn out to have quite major impact.
Absolutely. And I mean, the other thing that it does is when you're in a crawling position, you activate the very small, what we call the intrinsic muscles in the hand. And those intrinsic muscles in the hands are the ones that are going to be important for playing the violin, painting, drawing, handwriting. So it's important on that side as well. And then the other thing that it does is that when you're moving reciprocally, in other words, one side of your body is moving opposite to the other, which is what you do in crawling, you have to have messages go across from the left hemisphere of the brain to the right hemisphere very, very quickly. And they pass across a bridge between the two hemispheres called the corpus callosum. And the more a message moves across the corpus callosum, the more the neurons inside the corpus callosum actually myelinate. So myelination is the sheath that covers neurons. And the more heavyweight the sheath is, the more of a highway it is. I mean, if you can picture like an 8-lane autobahn in Germany, like a really well-traveled myelinated neuron is like an autobahn. And the reason that's so important is that messages from the left to right-hand side of your brain, or the left and right hemispheres, is incredibly important for just absolutely all aspects of development. Receptive language, expressive language, planning, it really is important. So this milestone, and it's been really interesting because it's a milestone that I sweat for all the reasons that I have just mentioned, because it's such a foundation milestone, was very interestingly became the topic of great debate in America a few years ago, where the American Academy of Pediatrics actually dropped it off the milestone list for children under the age of one. I know. And it created absolutely bizarre. It created an absolute uproar amongst therapists, because basically there were sufficient parents who were saying, my baby's not doing this, therefore it's creating anxiety that it's even on the milestone chart. So the American Academy of Pediatrics said, well, okay, we'll just take it off. But actually what they should have been doing was saying, why the heck are these so many babies not crawling? And of course, the main reason is that they're getting too much time in static seating positions, like, for instance, bumbo seats, walking rings, being carried in a way and in a pram all the time and in a car seat all the time. And when you're in those static devices, you don't get the opportunity to practice. And so then it's very easy to just go from sitting into walking and cruising and then walking later. So instead of dealing with that, like get rid of bamboo seats and walking rings, they said, oh, don't worry, we'll just get rid of the milestone.
Oh, dear.
Crazy. Yeah, no, it definitely had all of the OTs and physios on LinkedIn freaking out, and it still does. It's just not right because it's such an important milestone. And, if moms are listening and their baby didn't crawl, it's never too late. So I always say, if you get to 14 months, your baby's never crawled and they're a walker now, set up tunnels and obstacle courses and crawl over your baby. And crawling over your baby is a great activity where they're underneath you like a little bear. You're over them like a big bear, talking down to them, and they try and crawl out from underneath you. It's such a fun game. And of course, while they're trying to crawl out from underneath you, they're actually practicing this very important skill. And it doesn't matter what age.
Cute. That's a sweet one.
Yeah. So what else has happened? Because 8 months olds can often also produce some other little challenges around things like teething and sleep and so on.
Yes. So the sleep is still okay. She's usually either sleeping through, but again, it's not regular. It's probably like once a week, once every 10 days, something like that. And then most of the time she's waking up between 3:30 and 4:30.
Perfect.
And then she's either having a bottle or she's having some water. More often than not, the water is doing the trick at the moment, to be honest. So I don't know if I should be defaulting to the bottles or if I should be trying the water first still, but the water does 9 times out of 10 tend to get her back to sleep. And it's been hot, so I think maybe she has been a little bit thirsty as well. So that seems to be doing well. And then she wakes up at 6:30. So night times are manageable.
That's perfect. And then just before you move on to the other parts, the daytime sleeps, most of the ones at this age are still having their 3 sleeps, but it's not going to be long before she drops to 2. What is she doing now?
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep? ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
But it's not going to be long before she drops to 2. What is she doing now?
We're pretty much on 2 at the moment. It's not a perfect setup in terms of the wake windows, because often I'm finding that she will have a shorter sleep in the morning and then that kind of longer afternoon sleep. But she does wake up fairly early in the afternoon sometimes. And then I'm having to kind of manage bedtime a bit more. But she does cope with it well, and I just keep a very close eye on her in terms of the stimulation. And she does seem to manage okay with that. And that afternoon sleep can be 2.5 hours some days. So I'm okay with that, and that's working quite well. She seems to cope well with that, and it's easier, honestly, than trying to squeeze in another short nap at some point in the afternoon, which can be like a lot of work for like not necessarily a huge amount of gain. You know what I mean? Like, it's just sometimes feels like more hassle than is necessary. So she's coping well with the two sleeps in the day. So the last time that we chatted, she had just had that tummy bug, and she was mostly recovered from it. And then it was interesting. It took quite a long time for her to really fully recover her appetite and to kind of get back to normal. That's something that I knew in theory, but I think in practice it can be quite, not scary necessarily, but I find myself being a little bit anxious about her not being as enthusiastic about eating, and even to a degree her bottles as well, as she was before she got sick. And again, it was a very mild tummy bug. It wasn't major, but it was a very good reminder for me that is the reality, that sometimes they can take a little while to get back to full steam, and that there isn't really anything to panic about. And it is true that slowly but surely she has completely recovered her appetite to the point now where she kind of is back to normal, which is good. But again, a nice reminder that, you know, this journey isn't entirely linear, and we have to be, you know, rolling with the punches. And then she, on Sunday, which is a few days ago, she cut her first tooth. So I suspect that was also involved in her, in her kind of recovery of her appetite. The sort of teething symptoms weren't overly obvious. I think I've said this to you before, that every time she's kind of grizzly, I'm convinced there's a tooth coming, and that's been going on for like 3 months and nothing. So it kind of came out of nowhere. But yeah, she coped well with it. The night before, it wasn't like she was grizzly and difficult and in pain. So I think we were lucky in that respect. It was the bottom middle tooth. So I'm anticipating another little one along soon. But yeah, that sort of went well. And I'm also sort of glad that's a nice milestone. It's a nice marker at this age.
And it's so interesting because little ones teeth so differently. You know, she's been a fairly easy baby, and especially compared to your first little one. And so, you know, we could have predicted that she would sail through teething quite fairly seamlessly. And it's such an interesting thing because these sensory sensitive personalities and the more slow to warm up babies, like a new tooth is Hiroshima. Like, it's a complete nightmare for them. You know, they're grizzly, they're irritable, they go off their food completely. And then, you know, and you really know when they are teething. And then you get the other little ones who kind of sometimes the tooth just comes up and it's like, oh my gosh, was that it? You know, so yeah, so that definitely fits with her personality. And I would say, you know, the fact that she's had a little bit of gastro in the past month, and the fact that she's had teething, because teething creates so much mucus around their mouth, and it can often give them those very acidy smelling poos. I would maybe have a look at giving her a little bit of a probiotic. I don't know if you've done that.
That's actually a good idea. I actually have one that I must open for her.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. You know, I think we really don't give enough credit to our gut microbiome for little ones, and we need to make sure that we're protecting it, not just with giving them fresh fruit and vegetables and vegetable matter, so things like legumes and nuts and those sort of things in their diet are very important, but also maybe a little bit of a probiotic, particularly if there's been a disruption to the flora, because I think that often does cause some havoc with little ones.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's true for all of us, but I think, yeah, it's something that is probably overlooked a lot with little ones.
No, it certainly is, yeah.
Yeah, so that's been interesting. I suspect there's also a little bit of separation anxiety going on. Funnily enough, we had this experience a couple of weeks ago where she had one of those false starts. Doesn't happen often, but so again, I think to do with sometimes this last wake window is a little bit long for her. So she's quite tired of bedtime and she kind of passes out as soon as she's had her bottle. And then we had that false start 40 minutes later. And it's happened a handful of times now, fairly inconsistently. So I'm not too concerned about it, but it's interesting to me that at that false start, she can't be soothed back to sleep the normal way, which would be normally just putting her dummy in, maybe patting her bum, nothing major. She needs me to be sitting there. I don't have to be touching her, but she needs to be able to see me. So she'll roll over and look at me, just check I'm there, and then she'll go close her eyes for 2 more minutes, and then she'll check again. And then I thought, okay, let me just look at the app. And lo and behold, I open the app, and it says a thing about separation anxiety. I was like, okay, maybe what's going on? And I had mentioned it to my husband. So I said, listen, I looked in the app and it said that this is kind of appropriate for her particular age. So I sort of did a little bit of reading on it to remind myself how to handle it. But I think it might be creeping in a bit now.
Yeah, and this is absolutely the age. 8 to 10 months is exactly when it happens. And it's quite interesting the reason it happens. When babies are born, they actually, their psyche believes that they are you and you are them. And so you are, and in fact, in the kind of psychological theory that the mother is the object of the love. And so, you know, the object is just the same as them. So they don't have their own persona. And then at some point at around about this time, they start to wake up to the fact that they are their own little person. So they know that when they squawk, you'll come. When they drop something, you'll laugh. When they do, you know, so they start to realize, actually, I am my own person. And that realization, which is very important in the development of self, but it's accompanied by realizing that they're not you. And that means that if they're not you and you're not them, that means that when you're not around, you might be somewhere else. You might not exist, you know, so they start to call you back. And this stage is what we call object permanence. So we realize that the object exists outside of us, that, you know, they are their own person. And when that happens, they need to know that, you know, just make sure that you'll come back, that you'll stay. So it's very interesting. And I love the way you describe that, because, you know, that kind of checking out that you are staying shows that she's realizing that you do have the option of leaving. And so she's just making sure that you don't exercise on that option. So it definitely is. And, you know, the games that you play for that are things like hide and seek, you know. So I love the one of crawling around the back of the couch and calling her and seeing if when she comes to you, or, you know, crawling around the couch and saying boo to her if she's not crawling yet. And the peekaboo games. The hide and seek as she gets a little bit older. And then one of the things that I always say is you must always say goodbye when you're leaving and hello when you return. And, you know, I think a lot of parents can't bear the tears when they say goodbye. And so they just sneak out and, you know, I'm going to pick and pay, just keep her distracted. I'll be back in a, you know, in a little bit. And actually that doesn't serve this object permanence very well, because then it's unpredictable as to when you're coming and going. So it's always good to say goodbye when you're leaving and hello when you come back, and to start it with small increments. So if you're quickly popping down the passage to the loo, just say, bye-bye, I'm coming. And then, you know, go and then come back and say, I'm back. You know, even if there've been tears, don't ever fear tears. You know, if she feels a little bit sad, that's okay. And as long as when you come back, there's lots of love and cuddles, that's also good. So, you know, that's important, because I think it can be exacerbated, especially at the separation anxiety stage, where we start to sneak out to avoid the tears as we leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, in the daytime, we haven't had that particular situation happening, although I do remember it with Santi. But it, like I say, when I read up on it, it was a good refresher on exactly that, kind of how to handle if and when it does happen. But yeah, I suppose we'll see.
And I mean, back to the old theme of sensory personalities, it'll be different. You know, your slow to warm up baby is obsessed with not being separated, because when you're not there, it means that there's going to be something that's inconsistent, new, novel, different, something to get used to. And they just can't bear it. So they just always want the status quo, which means that you must always be there. So they really, really battle with separation anxiety. Whereas your social butterflies, much less so, and your settled babies also less so, because for them, you know, they just seem to take life's little perturbations and little challenges much more in their stride. So she may not actually ever freak out when you leave her, but it is just worth, you know, kind of keeping that in mind.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a good thing to know. I think that temptation to sneak off is real, especially when you're just trying to get on with your day. But it's, I think it's one of those many things, I think, where avoiding a little bit of, a meltdown is actually worth, like, it's not worth doing. It's better to actually just face it head on, and actually it'll be better in the long run.
Absolutely. So you have mentioned pretty much everything that I would think about for a little one of this age. I mean, it's quite incredible how it just always happens like that. The key things, I think, for this 8 to 9 month old stage that we'll be looking ahead to, she will consistently drop her third sleep of the day and never need it. And so that kind of sets the stage for what will go all the way through to a year of life, which is the two sleeps a day, one in the morning and then longer one in the afternoon. Bringing back the bedtime if she's really had a short midday sleep is exactly the strategy that you're going to want to look at. Crawling is, of course, very big. Another one that happens at this age developmentally is that she might start to clap and also recognize her name. So she might start to turn when you actually say her name and know that that's her name, and or maybe start to do some clapping. Has she started to do clapping yet?
No, no clapping. She has, funnily enough, in the last day or two started that, if not mimicking, more of a kind of a babble. She hasn't been a particularly chatty baby, actually, until now. Smiley, but not chatty. And in the last few days, she started to be like, bub, 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 that kind of bubbling or babbling, chatty kind of thing. So, yeah, that's quite sweet. So, and it reminded me that that's also the next thing coming, that mimicry.
That first word, yeah. So that first word is usually dada, unfortunately, where they actually start to say da-da-da. And then, of course, we all start to react because it's an easier sound to say than ma-ma-ma. And we all start to react and point at dada. And then, of course, they start to piece that one together. And the mums all sit there going, hold on, I'm the most important person here. And you know your dad's name first. So that will definitely
be
coming as well.
If her first word isn't Santi, I'll be absolutely amazed. She's completely obsessed with him. It is. They are so sweet. And that's actually another lovely thing. In the last 2 or 3 weeks, we've been on some holidays. And Tsitsi has been away. And so I've been, you know, essentially kind of full-time momming, which, you know, I don't do day-to-day because of my work. And it's, look, I was a little bit scared about it. I won't lie. But actually, as much as it has been tough at times and the juggle is quite tricky, my house is a mess, but we just have to accept it. It's actually been wonderful to spend real quality time with both of them, but especially with Aurelia. I remember the last time we spoke, or maybe it was the previous one to that episode, I'd just gotten back from that work trip and I was feeling really emotional about how little time I had spent with her last year because of what had happened with work. And it was, I was just feeling awful about it. And I really got to spend really good chunks of time with her over the last couple of weeks. And it's been so wonderful. Look, it's great because she, yes, is it quote unquote, an easy baby. So, you know, she's pleasant to spend time with. You know, I don't feel good about myself saying it, but it wasn't always like that with Santi. It was very difficult sometimes to spend long periods of time with him because it was such a struggle, just day in, day out. So it's really lovely to be able to do that with her. And, you know, to get to know her routine again and to have control over it, because the truth is, I'm sitting at my desk all day long, Monday to Friday. I'm not necessarily involved in the minute detail of when she's eating and when she's sleeping and, you know, that stuff that Tsitsi is in charge of. So it was really nice to kind of get to grips with that again. So I've really enjoyed that, even though, like I say, it has been tricky at times. Yeah, and of course, to spend time with Santi and then to observe them together, which is just the sweetest thing. I mean, he's never, people often ask me, like, what's the jealousy been like with Santi? And we've been so lucky. And I do think it's got to do with the age gap as well, which is 3 years, 3 months. And he's just obsessed with her. He asks where she is as soon as he wakes up in the morning. He plays with her. He makes her laugh. She just stares at him all day long. She thinks he is the most marvelous thing. And yeah, that is a very special thing to be able to witness.
No, it really is. And I think, you know, you mentioned the 3 years, 3 months, which was something that I think I told you in our first episode, that the research has showed that that was a really good age gap for separation anxiety, for sibling rivalry, and also just for mums managing. It's a really good age gap. And the other thing that actually is quite preventative for sibling rivalry is an involved dad or an involved partner, which I know that you have, because then, you know, Santi's never feeling like there isn't a set of hands for him because everybody's macking in, you know, whereas if you are a single mom, it must be a lot more difficult. Or if you're a mom with a husband who's very absent. And, you know, I grew up in a home where my dad was a professional sportsman at the time. Well, he played for South Africa at the time. And he was away on tour, I think, I mean, for most of my first 2 years and maybe my sister's first year of life. And and the sibling rivalry between us, I think I felt, and I mean, obviously I'm projecting because I don't have a memory of this, but I think I must have felt a massive fracture in this one-on-one relationship when my sister entered the world, because there wasn't another set of hands and my mom didn't outsource to nannies, or, you know, she didn't work. So I think, yeah, I think potentially that's where some of our sibling rivalry came from, and we've had to navigate that, you know. So I do think an involved dad is a very important thing. It really is.
Yeah, not least of all for the pressure it relieves for the primary caregiver. I mean, I've said it before, I think single mothers, single parents, but like mostly single mothers are absolute heroes. I have no idea how they do it.
No, I'm 100% on that page as well. And then just before we finish off, something else that I picked up that you were talking about, which I just think is such an important lesson. You know, we don't always, nor not every family prioritizes holidays, sometimes because they don't necessarily get them, and sometimes because maybe they don't have the means to get away. But actually, time on holiday, I think, has been one of the most critical parts of my children's development. So my children are now three young adults. I've got one teenager left and two young adults. And I can remember when my son matriculated, he's the eldest, I can remember saying to one of my best friends, I was quite teary, we were in Mozambique together, and I said, this is it, this is our last family holiday. Well, I can tell you 100%, he's now 26 years old. They all three kids are always home for every single holiday. It is just, and they're bringing their partners, and it's just been an incredible, and in fact, I literally said 2 days ago that I think this young adult stage of parenting is the best ever. It's our house is always full of young adults, and they are fascinating, and I'm curious about their minds, and they're curious about us as well. So it really has been delightful. But I think that habit was bedded down in very early high priority around holidays. And it doesn't have to be an expensive holiday. I mean, we used to go camping. We also used to go to Mgazi once a year. That was our treat. We used to go every January to Mgazi, where we would have nannies to help us, but we were very much involved with our kids, you know, and we always had a rule, which we followed through the whole of adolescence. And even now with them as adults, is that you may not be on any device. Back in the day, it was Game Boys and Blackberries and then iPhones. And so we always had a rule that you may not be on any device while you're on holiday. In fact, when we went to our farm, we used to have a farm in the Bushveld. We used to lock all devices in the cubbyhole of the rental car that got us there from Joburg. And we would only have one cell phone for emergencies down at the main lodge. And the reason was quite simply that we have to have that focused time. And what you were talking about there around that reconnection into their rhythms and their routines and their signs and their signals and their, you know, all of that, you don't understand yet, Julia, how important that is for the long term. It is like it will be what holds you together with your kids forever. It really is. So I mean, holidays are very, very important, and preferably where you are carrying the load and feeling the pain, because you know that's how all the connections are made. So I love that you've been doing that, and that you are going to be doing another holiday, I think, coming up soon as well.
Yes, so Aurelia will be going on her first flight. It's just a little one, but we're going on holiday next week for 5 days. And yeah, just nice to have a change of scenery, and also to go to a place that's meaningful to us. And also, it's a place with, it's, you know, obviously middle of summer here, and it's a part of the world that's got no waves. And so it's wonderful for Santi to splash, and we don't have to be kind of paranoid the whole time. He can be right in front of us and having a wonderful time, and she can be on the beach, and we can all be doing something together in a really relaxed setting. So I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, you're doing all the right things. It's just wonderful to watch your journey and to hear how she's just blossoming. It's very exciting. So we will chat again. And yeah, thank you once again for sharing with us, Julia.
Well, thanks, Meg. Chat to you soon.
Chat soon.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.